On the next Lord's Day morning I set off for Bolton, to hear the same minister, whom I afterwards understood to be a Mr. Jones. Oh, with what earnestness did I pray and beg all the way, that he might tell me what to do, that I might be saved. But instead of this, he cut me up to all intents and purposes, and declared that all those who were working for life were under the law and therefore under its curse. Thus, during the whole day, I could hear of no encouragement save to God's own people, and I returned as miserable as ever. Oh, what a journey I had home, sometimes wringing my hands and crying with bitter lamentations, oh, that I had never been born. Oh, my poor soul, thou art lost forever. Oh, my place will be with devils and damned souls for ever and ever. How I reached home, the Lord only knows. But when I did, my wife asked me how I was. Oh, cried I, worse than ever. It is all over with me, and there is no hope but for God's people. She told me I should go no more to hear that man, for he would be sure to drive me mad, and I should be taken to the madhouse, which I indeed began to fear would really be the case. I therefore thought I would try to put away the thoughts I had of death and eternity, and tried to compose my mind as well as I could, consoling myself with the resolution to do the best in my power, and perhaps things would be better than my fears. I went therefore to bed rather more comfortable, but I had not been so long before that text thundered in my heart and in my ears, "The wicked shall be turned into hell, and all the nations that forget God." Oh, cried my soul, that is I, and that is I. I am the wicked wretch who has forgotten God, mocked God, abused God, despised God. O my poor, ruined, lost soul, thou wilt be turned into hell with all the nations that forget God. O the dreadful feelings I experienced! I actually thought that the devil was then coming to fetch me, body and soul together. Oh, how my inmost soul did cry to God that he would spare me but for that night. How often did I promise that I would do all that ever I could to please him, and entreated with tears that he would not let the devil fetch me that night. And I thought the Lord heard me, and for I felt more composed and shortly dropped to sleep. Upon awaking in the morning, what thankfulness I felt to God that he had spared me and that I was not in hell. And who can tell, thought I, but God may yet have mercy on so vile a wretch who has gone to such lengths in sin against him and yet been spared to the present moment. I did indeed pray with all my soul and strength that he would forgive all my past sins, and I promised that I would for the future live a holy life and do everything in my power to please him and honor him all my days. Indeed, for several days after this, I went on pretty comfortable. Oh, the fear I had of sinning, for I thought that if I could but keep from sin, God would perhaps pardon me in what was past in his own time. And so determined was I to dishonor God no more, that I went into a secret place where no eye but God's could see me, and vowed with all my might to leave all the world and turn to the Lord and be his, and called upon him to be witness of my sincerity. But alas, alas, what is all our fleshly sincerity? The first blast from the devil blows it like chaff before the wind. I had been in the habit for many years of card playing. What shall I do, thought I, when Saturday night comes? I am engaged to play a few games at the card table, but I will not go, and they will not come for me. On Saturday night, however, my partner at the card table called for me, and saying it was near the appointed time, asked me if I was ready. What should I do, thought I? If I refuse, they will call me a Methodist and spread that report all over the parish. I will go just this once and then tell them I intend to go no more. With this determination, I went off. But oh, the misery that came upon me, as if I had been going to the gallows. But the fear of being called religious and a Methodist so overcame me that I entered the house and sat down with the rest at the table. When we each had our cards dealt out, and I had just taken mine, oh, how my guilt stared me in the face! How did conscience thunder in my ears, and that I had broken the vows which I called upon God to witness! And the old text, too, came like a thunderclap that shook both body and soul. Be not deceived. God is not mocked, for whatsoever a man soweth, that shall he also reap. I was so confused and confounded that I knew not what I was doing, and could no more tell which card to throw down than if I had never seen one in my life. In short, I entirely lost the game, which so enraged my partner that he called me the greatest fool he had ever seen, and the others heartily laughed at me. Poor things! They little knew what I had to grapple with within. I made the best I could of the matter, and to prevent their knowing the real cause, I said that I was very poorly and must go home. Thus speaking, I took my hat without ceremony, and it being dark, went into the fields, where no human eye could see me. It was a very dark night, and oh, the awful feelings of my heart! I thought of my vows and my breaking of them, of the dreadful majesty of that God whom I had mocked a thousand times, and of the horrible certainty of fast approaching death. And then those dreadful words came to my mind, because I have called, and ye refused. I have stretched out my hand, and no man regarded, but ye have set at naught all my counsel, and would none of my reproof. I also will laugh at your calamity. I will mock when your fear cometh. Proverbs 1:24-26. They made my very hair to stand on my head, and my poor soul so to tremble, that I feared I was dropping into hell every moment. My very joints were loosened, and what to do or whither to go I could not tell. I fell upon my knees and attempted to pray, but that text stopped my mouth in an instant. The sacrifice of the wicked is an abomination to the Lord. Proverbs 18:8. Then, cried I, it is all over forever. For I am the vilest wretch either in hell or out of hell, and if God will not hear the prayers of a poor wicked sinner, it is all over for ever and for ever. And now all my sins from a child came upon me like an army, with such weight that they actually pressed both body and soul to the very earth, and there I lay for a time with no more strength to stir than a newborn infant. And I believed in my very soul that I was soon to be where hope never comes. But oh, the amazing goodness of an abused God! He gave me a little drop of encouragement. Seek and ye shall find. Knock and it shall be opened unto you. Matthew 7:7. What can that mean? Exclaimed I. It can never mean that I am to seek and to find. I arose and looked around to see if anybody was near who might have spoken these words, but I could neither see nor hear anybody. Yet the words were again repeated in my soul with more power. Seek, and ye shall find. Knock, and it shall be opened. This so encouraged my poor soul, that I cried again to God to have mercy upon me, and told him that if he would but forgive my sins, I would tell all the world what he had done for me. I then went home, resolved that I would seek night and day for mercy and forgiveness of my sins until I found it. I went to bed much encouraged, and rose very early in the morning, blessing the Lord with all my heart that he had spared me another night. After breakfast, I set off for Bolton to hear Mr. Jones beseeching the Lord with cries and tears, that I might hear something to comfort my soul. Surely I thought this is the time that I shall find him. As I had sought him so earnestly, I quite expected to have my sins forgiven and to return home with joy. But oh, how was I disappointed! I thought that Mr. Jones preached to none but the elect, and such as had been born again. Then I again sank into despair, and exclaimed with bitterness of soul, "Oh, that I were one of the elect! Oh, that I were one of those who have been born again! What shall I do? Whither shall I flee? I have prayed and I have begged, I have sought and I have knocked, but I am not born again, and am not one of the elect. Oh, poor soul, poor soul! And thou art lost forever. It is all over. Oh, eternity, eternity! How can I dwell with everlasting burnings?" Oh, the miserable journey I had home! Nothing but wretchedness and misery. And what added to it was that my eyes were now opened to see a little of the evil of my own heart. I saw that evil thoughts were sins against God as well as evil actions, and God sent home that text to my soul with so much power that I thought I was dropping into hell at once. "Cursed is every one that continueth not in all things written in the book of the law to do them," Galatians 3, verse 10. Such light shone upon these words that I saw and felt too that I was damned completely, without the possibility of escape. And these words, to finish and seal up my certain damnation to my own views, came to my mind with no less power than the former: "For whosoever shall keep the whole law, and yet offend in one point, he is guilty of all," James 2, verse 10. I then saw as clearly as the sun at midday the holiness and justice of God in my damnation, and that it was utterly impossible for either God or man to save me. Now I felt that it was all over, and that there could be no hope for ever and ever. Now I saw that though I might repent and weep tears of blood, all that would not do. All things written in the book of the law. I was now led to see that this holy law required holy thoughts as well as holy actions, and it came immediately into my soul: "Thou shalt love the Lord thy God with all thy soul, and with all thy heart, and thy neighbor as thyself." Then again, like terrible thunder, sounded, "Cursed is every one that continueth not in all things which are written in the book of the law to do them." Oh, the "to do them" dashed me to pieces like a potter's vessel, and struck me dead on the spot from a glimpse of hope that God could save me consistently with justice. I now saw as clearly as at noonday his holiness and his justice in my damnation. And I told him that when I came into hell, I would tell all the devils that that no injustice had been done me, and that I could take all the blame upon myself and clear God of all wrong in executing his wrath upon one so vile, who had gone to such lengths in iniquity, and who, having made so many vows, had broke them all, and plunged deeper and deeper into sin, and been so great a mocker of God. Now, however, I clearly saw that my doom was sealed, for these words came upon the back of the other, "Till heaven and earth pass, one jot or one tittle shall in no wise pass from the law till all be fulfilled." Thus I saw that God is immutably fixed in his holiness and justice, and that he can in no wise acquit the guilty. In this miserable state I continued for some months. Sometimes I fell into a fit of desperation and thought, "Oh, if I could but have a little comfort here, even if I had hell hereafter." For of having hell hereafter I felt confident, "For cursed is every one," etc., and that I was one who had not continued in all things written in the book of the law, I knew. Well, thought I, let me have but a little enjoyment here, to drown the misery of my present feelings. As to hereafter, I can but be lost. The best method of fulfilling this resolution appeared to be by going a haymaking, it being now the hay harvest. I accordingly went to a neighboring farmer and inquired if he had need of a hand. He said yes, and bade me go into the fields. Upon joining the men, who all knew me and had heard that I had turned Methodist, some jeered me. Others called out, "Warburton is turned Methodist," and all joined in laughing at me. I tried to put it off with a laugh, too, but it was with a heavy heart. Yes, thought I, these are going to hell as well as I, and see how comfortable they are. And again, I resolved to be as comfortable as they, for if I do go to hell, said I, they will go too, and I shall not be alone. In the afternoon of the same day, there was what we call a wake, held at a place about 4 miles distant, and my fellow workmen asked me to accompany them. To this I consented, and 7 of us accordingly set out. But oh, what feelings I had at times upon the road. When we arrived there, the first thing was, of course, the public house, and I felt determined to get drunk and drown my misery and to enjoy myself as well as others. I had not, however, been many minutes in the house before that text of Scripture sounded like thunder in my poor soul, "Because he hath appointed a day in which he will judge the world in righteousness by that man Jesus Christ, whom he hath ordained." And that other text followed upon it like flames of lightning, "It is appointed for men once to die, but after this the judgment." My poor knees smote together, my very hair began to move upon my head, and I got up and went out with all the horrors of damnation in my soul. I hastened as soon as possible from the place, sometimes fearing the devil would seize me before I could reach home, at others falling upon my knees and crying, "God, be merciful to me, a sinner." But my mouth was stopped by "The prayers of the wicked are an abomination unto the Lord." I was confident that a wretch so wicked as myself never before lived upon the earth. And oh, the torments, the wrath, the bondage, the misery which I passed through. What dreadful and rebellious thoughts arose in my mind against God, for having made me a human being, that had a never-dying soul, that must endure all the torments of his wrath in hell, and where not a drop of water is allowed to cool the scorching tongues of the damned, who are continually crying to all eternity, "The wrath to come, the wrath to come." How I envied the very beasts of the field. "These poor creatures," said I, "have no souls to be judged." And oh, the anger and wrath that boiled up in my heart against God, because he had not made me a dog or anything without a soul to be judged at his righteous bar.